Greetings and welcome to Flanagan's Ecologic. I am your host, Ted Flanagan, and today we're talking glass, architectural solar glass, in fact. We'll be speaking with Jeff Horowitz. He's the Director of Business Development and Partnerships for Next Energy Technologies. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the podcast. It's great to see you.
Great to see you too, Ted. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, I'm delighted to have you. Tell me, what are you working on today?
Ooh, well, today has been a big day, and I spent the good part of the morning actually looking out my office window and admiring the sun, here in LA. We haven't felt like it's been weeks since we've actually seen the sun with all the crazy weather we've had recently. So first and foremost, enjoying the nice weather we're having here. But today I'm actually developing a press release. We're going to have some other content marketing material for an award that we actually received yesterday from the Pacific Coast Business Times. Next Energy won the Corporate Innovation Award in the environmental category. So we were getting that award last night at the Bacara up in Santa Barbara, our team. And so now I'm just kind of working calls, putting together, talking to our marketing team about ways to pitch to local statewide outlets and other trade, publication. So that's been on the docket for today. And then this week, just a lot of business development stuff. And I'm sure I'll, talk about what I'm doing at Next, but responding to a lot of positive inbound interest from potential commercial and industrial partners, thanks to some press we got in the Wall Street Journal. So a lot of exciting times. In fact, I think you might have a connection to Snowmass, but the town of Snowmass Village just reached out and are interested in our transparent windows for the town hall.
What was that award for, the current award that you got?
So it's just it's a corporate innovation award. We just did a installation with Patagonia, the large retailer. We installed some of our transparent photovoltaic windows on their headquarters in Ventura, and we announced a partnership with them. And I think it caught the eyes of the newspaper there, of the Business Journal, Central Coast, and it's just kind of an overall environmental award for the work we're doing up at Next.
But let's go back. I like to personalize the podcast a little bit. Born and raised, I believe you were born and raised in Irvine. Is that right? Irvine, California?
Irvine, California. Yes. The safest city in America, probably 10 years running in a row. So.
And what were your early interests, Jeff?
Oh, typical interest, as a young kid, I think just pretty sporty. I played a lot of soccer, loved to just hang out with friends, go on hikes. Irvine at the time wasn't nearly as developed as it is now. So there was a lot of green hills and, have fond memories of playing ditch-em with my friends, just running off into the hills and coming back at eight at night and scarfing down dinner and so forth. So it was a great place to grow up. Played a lot of music growing up as well. Played the guitar, studied classical guitar. So yeah, just typical. Being a young boy, staying out of trouble, which again wasn't hard in a place like Irvine.
And then off to, was it Claremont McKenna for undergraduate?
Yes, went off to Claremont McKenna. I was actually recruited to play soccer at CMC. Otherwise, probably wasn't a good enough student to get in. But I always thought I would go back east for college. I applied to a lot of the East Coast schools found myself not leaving Southern California for undergrad and did a lot of the same things as high school and college, played soccer there. I played in a band. And that's really where I discovered a strong interest in government and political science. At the time I developed actually a strong desire to go into politics and public service. Didn't quite pan out that way, but found my interest there. Studied abroad in Shanghai my junior year and fell in love with China. And actually, that's kind of what led me to start my career over there in China. So,
did that start before graduate school?
That started before graduate school. Yeah, I graduated from Claremont in 2003 and really wanted to go back to Shanghai, start my career there. So that's what I did. So I lived in China for 3 years. It's a kind of a fascinating experience I had early on. I was working for the Shanghai Port Authority for a state-owned logistics company. And I was the only foreigner in the entire state-owned enterprise. I mean, thousands of Chinese employees and myself. And so I did a lot of business development and marketing for the port. And really, that experience, I think, really opened my eyes to, economic growth and kind of the costs that come with it. You know, at the time, China was just expanding like crazy. They were the manufacturing floor of the world. And I saw, especially working at the port, I saw a lot of, barges with oil and coal coming in and out of Shanghai and all these goods on container ships that were leaving and just the environmental degradation that the people were experiencing in line with their, prosperity, because they were, it's probably a topic for another conversation, but it lifted a lot of people out of poverty at that time. And I saw firsthand kind of the environmental impact that their growth was having. And then in 2006, I came back to California and went to graduate school at UC San Diego's School of Global Policy and Strategy, and continued to study Chinese politics, international management, economics.
Such an interesting path, Jeff. I take it you had started to study Chinese, I think maybe you told me this some time ago, in high school, is that right?
That's right, yes. Good memory, Ted. I started learning Chinese in high school in Irvine. Spanish 2, I think at the time, was too difficult for me freshman year. So I switched to intro to Mandarin my sophomore year and studied it through high school and then continued it at college and into graduate school as well.
Yeah, that led you to this amazing experience in Shanghai. It's a sidebar, but I've been studying Cantonese now for a couple of years. After years of being together with Terry, and I've always said it was too difficult, and now I've been through 2 years of working on it. So I have a lot of respect for you that you could got to a fluency. You're able to.
Yeah, props to you. No, it's not an easy language, especially picking it up, later in life.
Yeah. So UC San Diego for public policy or global public policy. And then I think you had a job in solar after you came out of college or after grad school, before you got involved with the Clean Tech Development Group. Is that right?
Yeah, I did. I jumped from graduate school straight into the climate registry. I worked for a former guest of your show. I think Diane Wittenberg was on here at one point, and I worked with her at the climate registry, and I was a program manager there, really supporting our members. It's a member-based organization, helping companies and municipalities voluntarily measure and report their greenhouse gas emissions. So this was pretty early on at the time, developing a national registry to measure and, account for scope 1 and scope 2 emissions. So I spent about 18 months at the climate registry. And then from there, jumped into the solar industry. And I worked for a company called Perpetual Energy System here in LA. They're a power purchase agreement developer. I started working for them in 2010. And I really learned a lot there. So Perpetual was a subsidiary of Alliant Capital. And at the time, Alliant was doing a lot of low-income housing tax credits. So they formed a business on developing low-income housing by leveraging the low-income housing tax credit, the LIHTC tax credit. And they built a business around what at the time was new under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, the ARRA Act. 2008 and 2009, the ITC, the solar ITC, which still exists today. But they developed a business around leveraging the investment tax credit and developing a power purchase agreement sort of business model. So I was a solar financial analyst for them, really cut my teeth on looking at the economics of solar, you know, rooftop power purchase agreements. At the time, you know, Jigar Shah was a big influence of mine at the time. So what he was doing with third-party financing really inspired me. And I really learned a lot there at Perpetual Energy Systems, really starting my career kind of just valuing and sort of looking at the economics of, you know, solar energy systems.
So what lured you back to sort of the Chinese part of your life, or the Chinese interest part of your life? Because you went to this clean tech development group.
Yes, that's right. So I was in the solar space for many years, and then, you know, something was just itching inside. I really missed interacting with Chinese companies, and I missed China. At the time, China was growing more and more, and their impact on the environment and on the global economy was far greater. And I just had this desire to kind of go back to my roots, so to speak, or just my strong interest in pursuing opportunities and a career that involved China. So I met the director of the Innovation Center for Energy and Transportation, which is an NGO based out of Beijing that was developing a new program called the U.S.-China Clean Tech Center. We hit it off, and he hired me to run the U.S.-China Clean Tech Center, which was a joint venture between that NGO and the U.S. Department of Commerce. And basically, I ran that organization for 3 or 4 years, helping U.S. entrepreneurs of small to medium size enterprises, mainly in clean energy, environmental, remediation technologies. I helped them find business opportunities in China. I led a lot of, trade missions and helped them raise funds and kind of develop their product and markets in China, which at the time was investing heavily, and they still are, to try and clean up all the pollution and all the things that they have going on over there. So that was a great experience, because it allowed me to travel to and from China and really, get back into, that bilateral, U.S.-China focus that was that has always kind of been a strong interest of mine.
Yeah, it sounds so interesting. And I take it you're taking U.S. delegations to China. Were you doing the inverse as well, where you have Chinese delegations that came to the United States? So you're cutting both directions, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And the inbound was, there's a lot of Chinese delegations would come visit us in the United States. We tour them around here as well. And their interest was in bringing our technologies over there and kind of developing homegrown technologies of their own, and developing manufacturing capabilities and scale up opportunities for these entrepreneurs here. The more I talk, I think you'll see a trend of mine, which is kind of hopping between the public sector and the private sector, and then back to public sector, then back to private.
I'm wondering how you're getting your fix now of China. We'll get into that.
I spent a lot of time in China, and there's good and there's bad, and you develop, cynical, sort of perspectives on things. So I don't miss it now as much as I did when I first moved back to go to grad school. So I don't have an itch. I now have a family, and, we were home here in LA. And so I don't see myself transitioning back there too often.
So let's talk about let's talk glass, and this is our primary topic. And you're working for Next Energy Technologies. I guess it's been like over 6 years now that you've been there. Time flies, Jeff, doesn't it?
Yes, time certainly flies, Ted. And in fact, yeah, LinkedIn just reminded me of my 6-year work anniversary this week. I think of working at Next. So one of You know, and one of the beauties of working at the China, you know, Clean Tech Center was it exposed me to some really inspiring, you know, clean energy entrepreneurs and technologies. And I used my role there to sort of cherry pick the ones that stood out to me. And Next was one of those companies that was kind of top on the list of startups that I knew I wanted to join. And so, you know, I did just that in the, I think the spring of 2017.
I will butcher the description of this, but it basically you're somehow putting photovoltaics on glass and it's transparent, right? Now you can describe the technology a whole lot better. This is within the realm of architectural glass, right? That we're talking, but how do you describe the technology?
Yeah. Well, it might be helpful to first define the term architectural solar or architectural glass, you know, for your audience. And, you know, architectural solar is just defined as it's a solar energy generating technology that has architectural significance or is incorporated with an architectural design process. So whether it be a building integrated photovoltaic facade or a rooftop PV system that's architecturally, you know, coordinated with rooftop vents early on in the design process, it falls under the umbrella of architectural solar. And, you know, back to your original question, we see this sort of square peg in a round hole approach that's taking place in the market with companies, like Onyx Solar, for example. They're the commercial leader in BIPV glass facades. We're seeing the square peg in a round hole approach, especially for the vision area of the facade where people expect daylighting and they expect views from their windows. So current technology for BIPV solar windows, it's opaque, and therefore they must be perforated or patterned in order to have some level of transparency with significantly compromised aesthetics. So they're really degrading the aesthetic appearance of the window, and effectively they're turning it into a wall. You know, silicon, it comes from rocks. So it's not something you typically think about integrating into your window. It's a pretty clunky technology with limited transparency that really don't meet the needs of the market to have a good return on investment. So it's really all about making solar energy beautiful. And it turns out that the best way to do that is to make it invisible. So, yeah, that easy, right? Just make those ugly solar cells disappear. Easy peasy. Well, that's really what the amazing team at Next has figured out how to do. We've developed breakthrough transparent solar cells that allow us to make solar panels that look like normal windows. And so we're really 100% focused on aesthetics for this market. When we started the company, we were a bunch of scientists, you know, material scientists, focused on really pushing for higher and higher efficiencies and, you know, energy output. And we realized pretty quickly that once we engaged the market and the supply chain, we realized that what really matters to them was the color and the aesthetics. And so really first and foremost, it has to look and behave like a conventional low E window. And so that's what we've done. And so everything we do really starts there. We have the ability to do different colors and visible light transmissions, with fundamentally, we're all about aesthetics of the product.
Right, right. And then, I mean, obviously the next question is then how much production do you lose? If we say that a standard silicon panel is 100%, then one of your windows is generating 5% of that, 10% of that, what, approximately?
Yeah, it's hard to say because there's always going to be this trade-off between transparency and, right, you know, power conversion efficiency. So kind of backing up. So just kind of describing on how it works, and maybe I'll go into that real quick. We can make a solar panel look like a normal window. And it really has to do with this unique absorption spectra of our proprietary semiconducting materials. So our materials have color tunable properties that can absorb light within a chosen spectral range only. So this results in really good visible light transmission, you know, transparencies essentially, and really high power conversion efficiencies. So our active layers in our device stack, so that means the coatings that absorb light and convert that into electricity, They have low absorption in the visible spectrum, resulting in high transparency for the human eye, but they have higher absorption of photons at larger wavelengths to convert into electricity. So the ability of NEXT semiconductors essentially to be transparent to visible light enables the entire glass to be covered with our energy harvesting coatings while having really the exact color transparency, the uniformity of a high performance window. And you contrast that to conventional solar cells, all light with wavelengths less than the onset wavelength. So basically the wavelengths of light at which the cell starts absorbing, all of those wavelengths are absorbed in a conventional inorganic solar cell. So if a conventional PV cell absorbs infrared light, then it will also absorb the visible light. And the absorption actually increases as wavelength decreases, making it non-transparent. Hence, current BIPV window products on the market, they're, opaque cells placed in windows that have to be perforated or patterned or sort of, speckled to allow for transparency. And so that so there is going to be this trade-off between transparency and power conversion, because in our case, we're letting more of the visible spectrum through. And instead of, converting that into power. And so to answer your question, ballpark, our windows produce anywhere from 20 to 50% of what a regular PV module generated, per square foot.
Which I think is remarkable. I mean, I've seen your demonstrations. I mean, I've seen your glass, and it looks totally like normal glass. You don't see these coatings that's on it. That's the magic of it all. So it seems like getting 20 to 50% is a remarkable accomplishment. And then one of the things that we know about commercial buildings is that if you don't use the glass, if you want to put solar on the rooftop, you get very little, right? There's just very little rooftop area compared to square footage within the building. So your concept is to work with, as I understand it, work with commercial glass companies and sell them this technology so they slather it throughout our cities around the world.
That's right. I mean, there is significantly more facade area available on the vertical surfaces of our buildings than compared to the rooftop. And so, yes, we on a per panel basis, we're less efficient, but the energy generating potential for generating energy on a building, is far greater. So we do case studies all the time. And one I like to reference is, imagine a 30-story commercial office building, 500,000 square foot gross area, located in Sacramento, California, right? A relatively sunny climate. It's built to the most current California energy efficiency Title 24 standards, and it's incorporating NEXT windows in a 60% window to wall ratio, which means 60% of the facade is glass with our technology embedded inside, 40% is not. So we can actually produce about 20 times more. So the surface area available for doing that compared to just the rooftop is about 20 times more, leveraging the glass facade. And so, despite being lower efficiency solar panels, by doubling as windows on the facade of your building, the annual energy generation for that building footprint is actually 3 to 10 times as much as the energy generating potential of just that building's roof space.
Yeah, big difference. Talk for just a minute about the commercial building glass market, because you educated me about this some years ago, and it's really an interesting, it's an interesting market.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's the float glass market. Really it's dominated. So float glass or flat glass, it's just the big sheets of glass that's being produced, both for architectural purposes or automotive. And it's really controlled by 5 or 6 major global players. They make almost all the glass in the world. And they then sell those large sheets of coated glass to window fabricators, which are plentiful. It's a pretty fragmented market. There's hundreds and hundreds of fabricators all around the world competing regionally. And fabricators are the ones that really add value to the glazing product. So they cut it to size, they heat strengthen it, they'll fabricate it into an insulated glass unit. They'll add solar control coatings to it to really just enhance, you know, the performance of that glazing product. So the flat glass manufacturers sell it to the fabricators. And it's the fabricators who we partner with. So these are our direct customers. We know that they want incremental, non-aggravating steps that add value. And so our expertise and sort of how we think about our business, you know, strategy and our go-to-market is our expertise is really in material science, right? On the material set and not on the whole window supply chain. So we're not trying to reinvent the wheel by becoming our own window fabricator and making the windows ourselves, but rather really enable our fabrication customers to have another high margin value added element that they can add to their, you know, to their products. And so NEXT coatings, they're applied to commercial windows during the window fabrication process. So we integrate with existing manufacturers without disrupting established workflows and supply chains. So really think of it as it's an asset light model. You know, we're a pure technology provider with no manufacturing facilities. And this strategy is really, it's allowing us to stay capital efficient as we scale our technology more quickly and multiple markets with established brands and, you know, market channels.
Now, you did mention automotive there at one point. Is it being used in the automotive world, or are there other applications?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we are primarily focused on commercial building, you know, windows, because it's really the application where we have seen the greatest interest from end customers and the supply chain, as well as really having the largest climate impact by helping commercial buildings with a ton of glass, you know, reduce their carbon footprint. But we also recognize that our core technology really does have the potential for market disruption and many other applications than just windows for commercial buildings. You know, this includes powering retrofit smart windows, you know, automotive glass, you know, moonroofs, for example, greenhouses, BIPV window retrofits, lightweight solar, consumer wearables even. You know, there's a lot of different applications. We're talking to all the major players in these market verticals. So there are a lot of applications to tweak this technology a bit to go after those markets. You know, our vision is a world where every glass surface, you know, produces energy. So just imagine that for a moment. I mean, the possibilities. Glass will no longer just be a component of construction, but also a renewable energy source and a key element in construction decarbonization efforts. So it's an exciting proposition. We're starting commercial buildings, but really having scaled, interesting conversations with automotive and others as well.
That's a great vision. Last couple of questions, quick questions. Biggest success so far in your career? Now you're just warming up, Mr. Horowitz, but if you could look back and say what's really worked for you?
Oh man. That's kind of a hard question, because I think the biggest success in my career is what's ahead of me. You know, it's what's yet to come. There's a lot of work to be done to combat the existential threat of climate change. I don't know, maybe that's a cop-out answer, but I think when I look back at my career, you know, when it's all said and done, you know, the things for which I think I'll be most proud of is living a life of purpose and choosing a career of purpose. And, you know, a life of purpose, this is the gift that my children have given me. I have three amazing kids that really inspire me to really just work as hard as I possibly can to make this world a better place. And then a career of purpose, this is the gift that NEXT Energy really has, you know, afforded me. And I'm extremely grateful for the intersection of these two purposes. And I'm proud and you know, entirely hopeful that our efforts to make the world a better home by decarbonizing the built environment will benefit my children for the decades to come.
Well put. Let's leave it right there. This is a great discussion, and thank you so much. You're making huge contributions, and I love your I love Next Vision, that every glass surface will also be part of the solution to this climate problem that's wreaking havoc on the planet.
Well, thanks, Dad. I really appreciate it. It's always great to talk to you. And I have to say it's an honor to be invited onto your show. I've been a big fan of the Flanagan Ecologic podcast and, you know, what it represents and what you're doing. So thanks for chatting with me and for catching up.
Let's be in touch.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye. That's it. Thanks for listening to Flanagan's Ecologic. We'll see you next time.